welcome back to Feisty Mindfulness for this week's mini-sode. So, I was pulling together different mindfulness meditations and thinking about it and had one planned out, and then I came across some research by a psychiatrist named Dr. Stuart Eisendreth. Probably not saying that right, but that's as close as I can get. Talking about how we can improve our quality of life by changing how we relate to our thoughts and feelings, and how that relates to depressive thoughts is the term that they use. And so I read through this article and I pulled some information that I wanted to share with you guys while we are wrapping up depression. So there are certain thoughts that are considered to be pretty common in individuals with depression, and these negative thoughts can be kind of, you know, lumped in with what you might consider symptoms. We talked a lot about different symptoms of the different types of depression. And so these negative thoughts, which is something that we did describe quite a bit, can be considered, you know, part of the symptoms, if not some of the most pervasive symptoms. So you can notice that certain thoughts are typical for you when you become depressed, and these thoughts form your depressive signature, is what this doctor is calling it. These thoughts form your depressive signature. They represent your symptom pattern just as much as maybe you're somebody who doesn't sleep well when you are having your other depression symptoms, or maybe you're somebody who sleeps a lot and sleeps, you know, too much. Maybe you're somebody who overeats when you're feeling depressed, or maybe you're somebody who doesn't have any appetite at all when you're depressed. Anyway, so those are all kind of like a signature of what your symptoms are when you're depressed. And that's different for everybody. And so these negative thoughts are also kind of, not kind of, they are included in this kind of like symptom collection that represents how you experience depression. So how does this relate to mindfulness? We talk quite a bit about that on the other mini-sode, that it can be very helpful when dealing with depression. It's not an end-all be-all treatment, but it can definitely help a lot. Several components of mindfulness play a particular role in helping to heal depression. First, mindfulness, the purpose is to focus on being present in the moment. And when we focus on being present in the current moment and focusing on just one moment at a time, we tend not to focus and ruminate about things that we're upset about, or past failures and that kind of thing. Another feature of mindfulness that allows you to cope with depression is decentering. And this is something that I hadn't thought too much about when we were talking about mindfulness as it relates to depression before. But decentering allows you to gain distance from depressive thoughts and feelings. And I described it a little bit differently when we're talking about, you know, mindfulness in general. And I think that the example I used in a meditation was watching some of those more like anxious or stressful or negative thoughts kind of like float by as if they were on a cloud. And so they're not there to stay. You're not ruminating on them. It's more of an observation of like, oh, okay, that's a negative thought. And then seeing it as if it's like a cloud, and that cloud is drifting away. It's not going to hang out. It's not going to sit there. It's not going to hang over your head. So that is how I kind of represent decentering in my mind. In order to decenter from depressive thoughts, it's helpful to make a list of the top 10 most common thoughts that occur when you are depressed. It may be useful to include on your list thoughts that you tend to believe very strongly when you're depressed, and then when you aren't feeling as depressed, you can have a little bit of realization that, okay, those are not so real. And it is my depressed mind that hooks into those more so than my brain that, you know, is focused on reality and is lucid, more lucid when you're not depressed. So, if you can identify the thoughts that, you seem to have most often when you're depressed, you will be able to decenter from them more easily because you know that they are a symptom of your depression rather than a fact. Paradoxically, thoughts that we most firmly believe are often the least likely to be true. For example, many depressed people hold on tightly to beliefs such as I am unlovable, or I will never be successful, or, you know, there's something wrong with me. I can never, you know, I can never be fixed. I'll never be better. Those types of, you know, absolutes. And those are often the least likely to be true. These types of thoughts are cognitive symptoms that occur as commonly in depression as a fever occurs as a symptom of an infection. So that kind of gives you some, you know, relatability. It's real. It's a real symptom, even though it's in your mind, it's your thoughts. It's a real symptom. Those negative thoughts are true symptoms and you can treat them as such. And although people suffering from depression tend to believe these negative thoughts as truth, they are just a part of the phenomenon of depression as the bodily symptoms are, such as, you know, like we talked about before, your sleeping pattern and an eating pattern and, you know, all of a sudden not enjoying things anymore that are more physical symptoms. The symptoms in your brain are just as real. One way of testing whether a thought is a fact or a symptom of depression is to do this two-step experiment that's described in by this doctor, Dr. Stewart. So number one, if you temporarily see that thought as fact, does it lead to healing and peace, or does it lead to pain and suffering? If you are having a thought that leads to worsened depression, it's a good clue that it is related to the depression itself and it is not a actual fact. You do not have to ask anyone else, just yourself. So as you're making a list of these thoughts that really creep up a lot when you are depressed, when you ask yourself, you can just ask yourself, how do I feel after thinking that thought? Do you feel much worse? Then it's probably a symptom. If you feel more at peace, then it's probably more of a fact. If you have trouble, that's number one. Number two, if you have trouble letting go of the idea that your thought is not in fact true, that is because you are having trouble seeing it as just a thought. Another way to investigate whether a thought is true is to inquire if the thought often repeats. Are you ruminating on it? Does it repeat itself exactly the same way time and time again? If so, it's another good clue that it is part of a story that you've constructed. Once you recognize this, it's amazing how its power diminishes. It tends to lose its hold over you. You tend to ruminate on it less. You tend to repeat it less when you can recognize, hey, that thing that's repeating in my head is not real. It's this thing that I made up because I am depressed. And then another piece that goes along with this is loosening the grip of that judgment that you have against yourself. Depression tends to cause these, you know, overwhelming feelings of negative thoughts. And using mindfulness and observing that your mind is generating these thoughts and making them up allows you to start changing your relationship with them. For example, when feeling like a failure, you might say, there's that failure type of thought again. So instead of thinking about the failure and reliving it and owning it and seeing it as truth, you can say, oh, there's that thought again. There's a thought that I know I have when I'm depressed, and seeing it as kind of a symptom. So Another example would be, okay, I've been running. So, if I'm running and my right ankle tends to hurt after that first mile. When that happens, when I'm running and I surpass that first mile and my right ankle starts to hurt, I can recognize that. Okay, that's a symptom. That's something that continues to happen after this mile point. And so you can kind of treat it the same way with your brain. So that's my example. Thank goodness I haven't had a hurt ankle. Knock on wood. I don't have any wood around me. But that is just an example of, you know, how we might treat it physically and how you can then apply that same concept to your mind. So recognizing it as a thought that you know you have when you're depressed versus, you know, jumping down that and, you know, hopping down that bunny trail of like, oh, this is the failure, and then reliving that whole thing. You can stop yourself and say, oh, that's that thought again. I'm having that thought again, and it's not real. Or it's not true. So in one instance, a woman described feeling depressed after being fired from a job after several years because she was frequently argumentative. In fact, in the mindfulness class, she was often argumentative as well. She was encouraged to observe her argumentative thoughts in her meditation and to try letting them go and noticing how she felt. When she did so, she noticed she felt very vulnerable. She realized this perceived vulnerability was related to some past events in her childhood, but she no longer was as helpless as she had been as a child. She gradually was able to loosen up her argumentative style and stay more rooted in the present moment. So that's a little bit more complex of an example. I made it a little bit simpler in my head with just, you know, recognizing that there are certain thoughts that I have. For instance, you know, especially with that failure one, I'm that person who will recall something from a very long time ago and will get really caught up in reliving that moment and a lot of like what ifs. And so I find that I can see that pattern now that I focused on it, now that I think about it as a symptom and try and kind of like collect that. And I've done a lot of the same kind of work with anxiety where there are a lot of physical symptoms and there's a lot of like kind of hints that I'm headed down a more anxious path, and kind of collecting those and documenting them in my head or even writing them down. If you're somebody who does well writing them down, I journal a lot and I a lot of times can go back through and see those repeated thoughts because I'm writing them down multiple times. Where it's like, I'm worried about this, and 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 I'm like, oh, that's all the same kind of thing, and that stems from a lot of anxious thoughts. Doing the same thing with depression, I'm definitely somebody who relives those, like, moments where I'm like, if I would have just done this, everything would be better. Or if I would have done this, then I wouldn't be where I'm at now and I wouldn't be struggling so much, which most times is not true because life, you know, life is what it is. And there are harder times than others. And that's not necessarily something I directly control. And that is something that I struggle with. We can save that for we can save that for a different day. I could probably do a whole podcast about like control and people with highly functioning anxious people and how control plays into that. Anyway, so this example that the doctor used with the woman describing feeling depressed after being fired for being argumentative and focusing on those argumentative moments and thoughts and kind of unwinding it from there, backtracking and finding out the root of where that argumentativeness, woo, that's a intense word, where that stemmed from. And then, you know, being able to gradually loosen up that argumentative style and stay more rooted in the present moment. So to wrap up, MBCT, Like we talked about before, those programs have been scientifically proven in a National Institute of Health study to bring relief to chronic sufferers of depression by helping them realize that their thoughts are not their reality. And so I just thought that this little bit of kind of actually taking a step into that MBCT realm. I am by no means an expert or somebody trained on MBCT, but I thought that this article from Dr. Stuart Eisendrath, you know, after I read that and kind of pulled together my thoughts on it, it can be a really great step in the right direction. And so if you're somebody who is a depression sufferer, I would really, really encourage you to look into MBCT and the therapist who can help you work through that. There's also groups that have somebody trained to facilitate in those groups, those MBCT techniques, and looking them up is also a really great free option. I have a lot of good luck with Psychology Today, doing some Googling and finding actual, like the National Institute of Health and the NAMI that focuses on mental illness. And they a lot of times have great resources and things like that. And you can educate yourself for free on these MBCT techniques. And I will probably continue to talk about them because they are extremely helpful. But yes, if you have questions about MBCT in general, go back to my last mini-sode. I go into quite a bit of detail about that. But yeah, I hope you guys have had a good, I think this will be after the holiday. So I hope you guys have had a great holiday. I know there are some people who have kids back in school and virtual, and some maybe physically back in classrooms or splitting time and what have you. And I know that that can be, I don't have kids and I don't have people around me with children that are going back to school, you know, that I'm really, really close with, but I have been hearing stories and reading about things in, you know, my social media friend group, and I'm thinking about all of you, and I encourage you to give yourself some grace and use some of the techniques that we have gone over in past episodes, just to kind of, you know, help your brain work through those things. Take care of yourself, parents out there. Take care of yourself. You know the expression, in the airplane masks deploy, you need to put yours on first before you can help everybody else. So I think that very much applies in this situation. It can be really overwhelming to be diving into all of those really tough decisions with what happens with your children and their schooling. It can be feel very overwhelming. And make sure that you're taking care of yourself first before you are throwing all of your energy into all of that and everybody else's and other parents' emotions. And I also think sometimes it's great to take a step back from social media. I call them negativity cyclones, where all of a sudden you see several posts all about the same thing and all the comments about them, and everybody just kind of feeds off of each other's negative energy. And you can get pretty down about the possibilities and some of the good things that can come from our situation, which can be hard to find, but I do think that they're there. So yes, I encourage you during this time, beginning of September, to take time to take care of yourself before you dive into taking care of others. Yeah, as always, if you like what you're listening to, like, subscribe, reach out, follow us, let me know what you want to learn about, what you want to hear about. If you have questions, it's feistymindfulness@gmail.com, feistymindfulness.com, at feistymindfulness for Instagram, Facebook, the Twitter. I think if you type in feisty mindfulness, it should pull it up. But it's some truncated version because Twitter makes the usernames, yep, they have to be short. So I think it's F mindfulness, but without vowels or something along those lines. So anyway, there's lots of ways to reach out. And like and subscribe if you like what you're listening to. That helps us as well. And thanks to Anchor for sponsoring our podcast. Yeah.